Welcome to the Mead Musings podcast.
Here we open discussions on everyday hidden issues,
like living with disabilities and dealing with illnesses. We also cover issues around conditions such as stroke, diabetes, autism, cancer, leukemia, and also living in abusive relationships.
We focus on helping people see the light at the end of the tunnel.
This podcast is available on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform. Please subscribe.
Thanks for listening.
Welcome again to the Mead Musings podcast. Today, we are continuing the special episode for the Autism Awareness Month, and we are talking about the use of stem cell and umbilical blood for treating autism. Our guests are Dr. and Mrs. Wears, all the way from Florida. So, thank you and welcome again to the episode. Autism now affects at least one in 68 children. Let's just keep raising awareness and talking about these issues. The podcast is going to be shared on different platforms. We are on Google, Apple, Spotify, Good Pods. Anywhere you listen to your podcast, it's on YouTube, Tumblr, it's on any other app that people listen to podcasts on. Really grateful to Dr. Wes and his wife for joining us today. I'll just leave you to introduce yourself.
My name is Chris Weiss. I have a son with autism. I actually went to Florida State University and I majored in chemistry and nutrition. So I really think that that major helped me on my journey with my son, because a lot of children with autism have gut issues. Had a long journey with him. I think we've done a really good job. We wrote a book together on our journey and the things that we did to help him become a productive member of society. And he just turned 29. So he's doing great right now. He's living on his own. He drives a car. He has a job. He has a girlfriend, just his first girlfriend. So really excited about how well he's doing.
My name is Eric Weiss. I'm a physician. I went to Davidson College and Duke University Medical School, trained as a general surgeon, then as a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. And Marston is our son with autism. And that, you know, changed my life, because relatively recently we found out that umbilical cord blood and stem cells have the ability to really impact these children's lives and brains, you know, help heal them. And we did that for our son. And it has led me to slow down my surgical practice and to start to do this at least 2 days a week. And it'll probably turn into a full-time job as I give up my surgery practice probably next year, and I'll be treating, you know, autistic kids full-time.
You only just recently realized that the stem cell umbilical cord could be used in treating autism. This is not something that is widely publicized. So is it like a continuous treatment, or is it?
Nobody knows. And so we know from the initial Duke study that kids tend to improve until 6 months and then they plateau, but they never regress. And this correlates with how we think these cells work. These cells don't stay long term in your body. They increase and work for about 6 months and then they go away. So it may be you get treated every 6 months until you get to an area where your child is neurotypical. We don't know that yet, just because those studies haven't been done. But many families see so much improvement after one treatment, they're coming back for another in about 6 months.
So if people wanted to get in touch with you for treatment, how can they get in touch with you? And do you have like websites or email address and other protocols that people have to follow?
Right. I have two websites. The first, for truly the regenerative treatment and the stem cell treatment, is NorthFloridaStemCells.com. That's NorthFloridaStemCells.com. And there's a contact form and you can ask questions. You can leave your email. You can email us directly. Everybody in the office is well-versed with answering questions. There's a phone number there. You can call us. We can answer all your questions. But it's very easy to set up an appointment with me. This is a big decision. I know what it's like to be a parent. So I call and talk to everybody on the phone when we're first starting to think about it, because, you know, there's questions they haven't thought about. There's questions they have thought about. There's people, you know, who think this is kind of a crazy treatment. And I can send them really scholarly papers on why it's being done. You know, this is not a flash in the pan type treatment. There's good experimental evidence that it works. There's animal examples of autism that it works on. And now there's clinical trials that it's working on. But
and we've been doing this for about 3 years now.
Right. And we have testimonials and remarkable stories. And so
and some kids who come back for their second and third treatment because they've had so much success. You know, we've had kids who are non-speaking and now they're speaking. We've had kids who are doing amazing in school. We have a lot of success stories. It's an amazing.
Okay. And when you're talking about this treatment, what are the cost implications for parents? Do they have to be there in Florida physically?
Yes. Well, the child has to come to us. And, you know, our nurses are very good. We, you know, we'll meet with the family before we do it. We go over everything again. If the child needs sedation, we give them the sedation. But the child stays with the parents the whole time. We start an IV. And then the cells are just given through the IV, you know, very quickly. But everybody in the office is set up to do this. It's a gentle, kind area, and we want to make it as easy as possible. However, it does cost money, and the money is not cheap. And we treat based on the weight of the child. So the older the child, the heavier the child, the more cells they need. And this was demonstrated at the Duke study, where if you were below a certain threshold, there was no benefit seen. And so that threshold is about 1 to 2 million cells per kilogram. And so they go by vials, but each one vial would be like $4,500, two vials, $8,500, three vials, $12,500. And this product is expensive for a variety of reasons. And first and foremost, when a child is born, the cord and the cord blood gets rushed to the lab. It has to be there within 48 hours. And so all that's processed. And in the meantime, they're doing genetic screening on the mother, genetic screening on the father, and then blood work on the mother to make sure there's no HIV or hepatitis or Zika virus, you know, all the different, you know, viruses out there in the world that could be transmitted. And it takes about anywhere from 4 to 5 weeks to get all that data back. And the data is very stringent. There's data on you can't have a tattoo within the last 6 months. You can't have traveled in 6 months. You can't live out of this country for 6 months. And so probably 8 out of every 10 get discarded. So the company has invested the time and the energy in getting the product prepared only to throw it away. And so that drives up the cost a little bit.
Did you say they can't live outside the country for less than 6 months?
No, I meant to say they can't have traveled outside of the country within 6 months, because the FDA is concerned of picking up a viral illness that's not currently seen in the United States, such as, you know, from Ebola to Zika to other diseases.
Oh,
right. Okay. Dengue fever. You know, people go to the
mother,
Caribbean.
The mother who's donating the cord.
Right. And then the genetics of the family trees, both parents and grandparents, gets looked at, and other siblings actually as well.
Okay. And when you're talking about these genetics, does the umbilical cord blood used have to have the same genes or DNA as the child that is being treated?
That's a great question. And the answer is no. These cells are so new, they don't have these special proteins on their outside that are called the self proteins, something called HLA proteins. Like if you get a liver transplant or a heart transplant or a kidney transplant, it has to be matched to you so you don't reject it. Well, these cells don't have those proteins on them. So they're kind of generic cells. They can be given to anybody.
All right. And when you say it's just generic cells, so why is it that the parents have to be screened?
Because there are certain things that can be contained in the blood that can be transmitted. Plus,
no, but I mean, if it's a child that is already out of the womb that is being treated, why is it that parents still get screened?
Oh, because with a vaginal birth, there's sometimes mixing of the blood as you pass through the vagina. And so that's why there can be a maternal transmission of AIDS and hepatitis to the child. And so that's the big, big problem. Have you ever heard of Rogam? It's a very common treatment they give pregnant women, because if a pregnant woman is Rh negative, which is a factor in the blood, and they give birth to a child who's Rh positive, and there's mixture at birth, then the mother can develop antibodies against that factor. And if she ever gets pregnant again and has a child with that type of blood, the fetus can be attacked. So yeah, there is a maternal fetal mix of blood at birth.
Thank you so much for clarifying that. I still have another question going from there. How do you then source for your umbilical cord blood that you actually use in the treatment?
I get it from a company called Leocorps, which is a leader in biologics. They get the products from live healthy births throughout the United States. There's a donor network. I don't know, earlier, probably 10 or 15 years ago, people heard of bone marrow transplants.
Yeah.
A child had leukemia, you needed to give a bone marrow. Everybody was looking to see if their bone marrow matched. Well, that's really not done anymore, because doctors have figured out a way to completely remake an immune system through umbilical cord blood. And 6 out of every 7 children with leukemia doesn't have a donor in the family. And so they need this blood. And like I said, this blood is used for over 80 different diseases. And so as soon as you donate, it may not go to a child with autism. It may go to a child with leukemia, lymphoma, or any of these other diseases.
I was just going to come to that. We're talking about autism right now, but as you just said, the same treatment, the same fetus, the same umbilical cord blood can be used to treat other ailments. What other ailments have you actually noticed or experienced that this umbilical cord blood works for?
I've treated people with pulmonary fibrosis, a disease called sarcoid, and their certain lung measurements have increased by 20-25%, but usually it's a downward spiral and they need a lung transplant. Multiple sclerosis I've treated. I'm getting ready to treat Parkinson's, but kind of the big adult neurodegenerative disorders such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, ALS, multiple sclerosis, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury. All of these diseases are now being tested, and it looks like there's going to be significant benefit with the same type of treatment, because at their core, they all have neuroinflammation.
Thank you so much. And so the last bit that I want to talk about is the actual procedure for the treatment. So could you enlighten us about that?
It's really a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. So when I took my son, obviously he was older, and he had had an IV before, so he wasn't nervous about it. It was very easy. They just put an IV in him. They gave him some IV fluid and they put the cells in the IV bag, or they pushed him through, and it took about, 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's
and he was done. And,
wow.
It was kind of anticlimactic, because I didn't know. I was, in my mind, thought it was a different thing. You know, for him personally, it happened right away. He slept a lot that night, probably over 10 hours. And the next morning, we saw significant changes. He had conversations with us at breakfast that I was crying, because I was like, who is this person talking to me right now? it changed him immediately. In our office, we have kids who are much younger, and they're scared, And like I said, our offices babysat my son. So they know autism and they know they're very kind and gentle and they know how to treat the kids that come in. They're not afraid of anything. They warm, comfortable office because of the experiences they've had with our family.
And I think as a surgeon, I put people to sleep all the time, 4 days a week. And so to me, it's very easy. It's less traumatic, parents, the child, and obviously the staff, if we can give them a quick sedative and they become sedate and they just kind of lie down and hold their arm out. We can usually get the IV in, out treatment done, you know, before the child wakes up. And they're usually kind of sedate for about 30 minutes, 35 minutes. We always leave the IV in longer than it takes so we can watch them, make sure everything is good. Side effects are very rare. 2-3% of children have a little rash or a little fever. And we usually pre-treat with a little Benadryl or something to help prevent that. But the product's very safe. It has the ability to help and it can change lives.
Oh, thank you. So much has been talked about now within this podcast. And we just want to continue raising this awareness. I know because a lot of people still don't know about this treatment. And it's something that could be so life-changing. So mm-hmm. Why is it still that people and this kind of information is not widespread? I mean, we had COVID and the whole world was shut down. But autism and neurodivergent disorders are becoming widespread and nobody's talking about them.
Oh, I agree.
That is a great question.
I think this is worse than COVID because, you know, and not to minimize COVID, but when any new disease hits the world, the people that are affected the most are the weakest. And so the people that were affected by COVID were the old, the infirm, but this strikes at children, at babies, and they live a poor life their entire life. So I think the world should shut down. I do. I think we should focus, you know, there should be a task force looking at autism like happened with AIDS, because this is potentially altering the course of humanity. And we have to figure out what's going on and not only how to treat it, but what's causing it.
Exactly. I think once we know the cause, maybe we could fix that and reduce these rates. Yeah.
Right. And it affects boys more than it affects girls.
4-1.
And you think that will affect so many things because all these boys are wiped out of society. They're not going to get married. They're not going to have children. They're not, you know, you think that's going to affect what happens generations from now.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm just going back to something you mentioned earlier that your son was actually rejected because they said it was too old for the treatment. I'm thinking right now, could he have had a better quality of life if he had access to this treatment earlier in life? Because, I mean, there's so many things that he's missed out on right now.
I think so.
Yeah, well, it makes sense that the sooner you get better, the more your brain, you know, works and grows and things like that. But, you know, you have to remember he was already in his 20s when this was discovered. Mm-hmm. So he was born in 95. It was scored in 2019, you know, is when the first paper really came out. So he was already in his 20s. And so he didn't have the opportunity. You know, you don't know what you don't know. But we're glad it happened.
But do we wish he was 4?
Yeah, without a doubt.
We absolutely wish he was 4. It would have changed the dynamics of our family. If he
and his trajectory in school and everything.
Right. It would have changed school for him. It would have changed our relationships with our other, you know, children. It would have changed a million things.
Yeah. And then, I mean, talk about the schools. I mean, the fact is right now, children with special needs have less chances of going to school, especially in England. I mean, it's like a postcode lottery thing here to get a child with special needs to have a place in primary school, even in nursery schools. And government specifies that they have to go to these special schools, but then there's no place for them. How do we balance that? It's difficult.
And it's only growing. I mean, every year, autism is getting more and more and more
common,
and none of the schools are accommodating this. It's horrible. I don't know how that's going to happen unless you homeschool, which is even harder to do.
Or you can't because you're working.
And from your experiments you have carried out, is there any reason why there has been like this surge in these cases of autism?
Nobody knows why autism is increasing. But I think, like we talked before, that now that we know it's an inflammatory disorder, has been increasingly inflammatory in nature. From the foods we eat, the more processed foods you eat, obesity and overweight is a tremendous problem. The potential vaccines.
I mean, with vaccines, we went from
4 or 5.
I think what we had when we were growing up, maybe 4 or 5, to 72 vaccines now.
I know.
I mean, that's...
And those vaccines...
You really need all those. Should there be a customized, you know, way to give them, you know, farther out? Should we take the aluminum out? Yes.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of... That's not our genre. We're not in that. We're in the
treatment.
The treatment, because we can't change that. We can't change the vaccine schedule. We can't change. Yes. We're trying to treat what we have so far.
Yeah. But it makes, you know, it makes sense. There's just not good vaccine science. There just isn't. No good or any randomized placebo-controlled studies. You know, in the United States, there's about 3 million kids who have never been vaccinated. It would just be interesting to look at their health profile versus everybody else's health profile.
Yeah.
And that is not being done.
Well, they know in the Amish community, which does not get vaccinated, there's no signs of autism in the Amish community, which, why not study that?
Exactly. All right. Thank you so much for the insights that you've shared today. I really appreciate everything you've disclosed and talked about today. Is there any recommendations that you have for people living with autism right now and for parents as well who have to deal with the children who have autism, either they are grown up or they are right from childhood, you would know that something is definitely wrong with a kid. And sometimes, like I said before, parents deny that it is autism or it is ADHD or it is something else, you know. So what can you advise? What advice can you give to them?
Well, I think the book kind of tells everything that we did and we thought that would help. But you first have to get over denial and you have to treat your child like your child. You have to kind of, what we did is, what are his strengths? What are his weaknesses? How do we try to impact on his weaknesses? Does he need speech therapy? Does he need occupational therapy, behavioral therapy? You know, because this can lead to changes. What's available in the community? You know, where's he going to go to school? How's he going to go to school? What's he going to do after school? You know, all that stuff, you just have to make a list and start chipping away at it.
I would try to model my child up. You know, it's kind of, I always think like when you play tennis, you want to play tennis against someone who's better than you, so you get better. Well, I tried to model my child up. I tried to find groups that had children that he could emulate, that he could have an example of. And so, you know, you try to put him in activities where he's going to have success in those small little venues. That was what I did. I mean, everybody has to do their own thing and figure it out. But I think, like you said, the book shows, I have a chapter at the end of the book that shows the things that I did. And you can just now Google go online and look and see, is this something that, you know, is something that could affect my child positively? Let me look into this. There's a website called Autism Navigator that you can go on and you can upload videos of your child, and they will diagnose your child and they will give you pointers of how to help your child for free, for free. Now, AutismNavigator.com.
Yeah, Dr. Weathersby from our medical school, she's a leader in early diagnosis and a real autism pioneer. And so she's developed this where especially people who are in rural areas or people who don't have access, you can upload, tell them the history, upload videos, and get real practical advice from experts on what you can do. I think that's a tremendous benefit.
So thank you so much. And I'm so grateful. And just on a last note, do you have any last words for anyone?
Don't give up. Keep going. Keep working.
Yeah, the knowledge is exploding in this area. And it's a tough life. It's difficult. But say your prayers at night. Keep on every day. And hopefully your child can get better.
Oh, thank you so much. I am so grateful, and we hope to speak to you again soon, and I'll probably be sending referrals to you. If I send people and they mention my podcast, do you have any kind of maybe discount for them, a discount code?
No, I try to keep this as cheap as possible. Because right now my surgical practice is kind of paying all the overhead, pays for my building, it pays for my nurses, it pays for everything. And so I had to hire a couple people to do this, and the cells are exquisitely expensive. And so I'm trying to make this available to as many people as I can, because I don't have to make money doing this. I just have to not lose money doing this.
That's so nice of you. I mean, thinking you don't have to make money. But no. You don't have to lose money. Yes, I mean, if people thought like that, the world would be a better place.
Right, right. Well, you know, at something. Well,
I think you need to make money still anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, thank you for spreading the word. And, you know, you're a light for people who are looking for information. And we thank you for being out there. Without you, people wouldn't find us. So thank you.
I'm so grateful. I mean, life is full of so many up and downs, and we just want to try and make things better. If they can find information in a way by listening to our podcast, then that's good. That's a good thing, you know. So that's why I do this podcast. Thank you so much, and have a lovely, lovely, lovely weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
A big thank you to all our listeners who have been sending us messages through the message link. I would like to thank everyone who has listened in so far and contributed to this podcast. Thank you so much. We couldn't have done anything without you. Keep listening, keep sharing, keep downloading, and keep liking. Thank you again.